This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Yeah, they're a good team, and they pushed us back, but I didn't feel they created too many big opportunities. So it's just about focus, concentration, just doing the right thing. Cross should have been blocked, maybe should have been cleared. These little things against good teams in the Premier League will cost you, and probably cost us 2 points today. But I think we, just in the moments before, we had a nice few counter-attacks and it looked like maybe we can get that second goal. So overall, pleased with the performance. It's a good performance for to move forward in. It has been, you know, the aggression and the attitude and the desire of the boys have been fantastic. And the pressing, we are getting better and better at the pushing teams back and pressing them when they've got the ball. Our fans were unbelievable. And what I thought today, maybe one of the men of the match, loads of good players out there, but I thought the referee needs praising as well. It's not very often that we do, but he let it be a derby game, a proper football game. It's not like tippy-tappy and you can't touch anyone. I thought he refereed the game excellently.
Off the Ball kicks off now on BFM 89.9.
Man United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer post 1-1 draw against Liverpool. Liverpool's Jurgen Klopp's assessment of referee Martin Atkinson, quite different.
Yeah.
Quite different. Good evening. This is Off the Ball. I'm Ross, and in the studio with me, we've got Cam Razlan.
Hello.
Hello, Cam. We've got Arvin Sidhu.
Hello, everyone.
All right, Arvin. And Keishnan's here.
Are we doing a 1-hour show on VAR today?
You're VAR too far. You've gone too far.
VAR has reared its ugly head again this weekend. We will start with that Man United 1, Liverpool 1 game. The big contentious point here is the fact that Lindelof apparently fouled Origi in the build-up to Marcus Rashford's goal. VAR caught it. The referee seemed to have seen it and ignored it and played on. Goal was scored. Jurgen Klopp's gone mad.
You know, obviously off the first look, I thought it was a foul. Even when I watched the replay, I generally think it's still a foul. There was the slightest bit of contact. It wasn't major, but a contact is a contact. And it's to me, it's a foul. But I think the problem here isn't so much VAR per se. I think the problem is the way it's being executed in England at the moment. Because on one hand, you'd want to argue that you want to give more power to the referee. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, the referee isn't getting the opportunity. He's the one making the call,
yeah.
But he doesn't have the opportunity to see replays of the incident. He's got another guy in his ear who is watching the replay. Half his mind is thinking that I've got to support the referee's decision.
Yeah,
he's partially biased towards the referee. And he's just agreeing or disagreeing with it, right? And I think if... Right, to me, it doesn't matter if you want to call it a foul or not. But the problem is, if you want to genuinely pass the power back to the referees, they've got to be able to just walk to the screens, watch it, decide for themselves, and then make that call.
That seems a matter of time before that actually happens.
I disagree with. I'm beginning to disagree with VAR, and I kind of disagree with you. Keishan, the way I was watching the Villa game through a Villa fan vlog, and he was in the stadium, and I think they had two VAR calls in that match.
Yeah,
and really, the people who are being penalised are the people who are at the match because they have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
They cannot celebrate. Their celebration is instantly quashed. And when, let's say, it says no goal, they are not told why it's not a goal. So in the case of the Villa game, the action was happening at the other end of the pitch. They could barely... There was apparently a handball or something.
Yeah, a foul in the build-up to the goal. Yeah.
And they had no idea.
But back to this Man United-Liverpool one. Was it, Arvin? Do you reckon? Should VAR have been used to chalk off the goal?
Okay, so the process has been followed. You cannot dispute the fact that there's been two levels of checks here. The referee, firstly, thought it wasn't a foul. He VAR checked and said that it wasn't a foul as well. Mm-hmm. So the process per se has been followed. It's a question of what Keish said, is the process good enough in England right now? You cannot dispute the referee or get upset with the referee when the process has been followed. Now, there's been an increasing number of VAR calls in all games across England this week. And it's a matter of, does the referee go look at the screen or does the referee just trust the voice in his ear?
Yep, yep.
In this case, he did. you get some of this and some of this you don't. So in that sense, you cannot dispute what is already in place because that's what's in place.
I mean, even whatever Cam just said, I think it's a fair point. The whole argument about it taking away a bit of thrill from the fans
and there being
confusion within the stadium.
Yeah.
But again, I think that's a problem with the system, not the idea of VAR in itself. A better way to improve it would be to have a system that immediately explains why the goal was disallowed. Explain it on the big screen. Put up explanations.
That would further enhance
Well, Keishan,
you're wearing your rugby shirt here, your England rugby shirt. In rugby, the referee speaks to the stadium.
Pretty much the same as cricket as well. Yeah. It's been running flawlessly for years.
And they say what the problem was and what the decision is.
I think you add 10 seconds to the delay. I know there's always been this argument about football is a fast sport. You don't want to take the thrill away for it. But I don't think we're taking a large portion of the thrill away from it. I think it's a fair trade-off if you're ensuring that you're getting a lot of decisions correct. Like the Sadio Mane handball.
Yeah.
It was the right decision.
I don't know. I got the impression from inside the stadium, it's like the death of football, actually. It really
it's a death of football. But
it is because it's more black and white. This is black and white.
It is. But you take away the romance, but you give back to the business side of football, because as what we say, you cannot have calls that are going to cost you relegation every season. It's going to cost you a European place. These are calls that are meant to be there
and make sure that the decisions are correct. Let's not forget VAR is here in the first place. Because for years, people have been criticizing referees.
And after
a while, there's only so much of money you can dump into the referee training program. Because in a game that's as fast as it is right now, referees are not going to be able to keep up with the pace of Ronaldo, the passing of the ball. They're bound to make mistakes, and you need the system to help you.
Well, I'd say, just a quick conclusion, to quote a fabulous song, I predict a riot. Eventually, that's going to be VAR, right?
Very good, very good. Football-wise, are we surprised about how Man United set up?
I mean, Ross, we've had this conversation about Man United before, right? Again, obviously, there were nerves before the game because it's Liverpool. But a part of me was a lot more confident about this game than I was about the other games, because Man United's blueprint under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer this year has been or is a bit more effective when they're up against teams that dominate against them. So you watch the game against Chelsea on match day one. Chelsea controlled possession, but you knew that's how United were going to be dangerous with James and Rashford hitting them on the break. The same thing happened against Spurs. The same thing happens against Arsenal. Against every other team where United dominate and have to attack low blocks of defence, that's where they don't have the personnel for it. Last night was a clear example. Even at 1-0 in the second half, there were so many chances. Marcus Rashford came so close. Mm-hmm. Daniel James had a number of breakaways with pace. This is where United can show their strength. But unfortunately, it's not going to happen week in, week out.
That is the point right now. Tactics-wise, he got it right. They know how to play against such teams. Yeah. But we are all forgetting the bigger picture right now. They started the week on 12th place. They are on 13th right now. And how is he going to be able to get all his players up? You don't play Liverpool at home every week.
Exactly.
You've got Norwich away next, and that's going to be a testament to seeing whether this works.
That's the problem. They need to be able to diversify their approach against teams that are going to defend in numbers.
And they won't be able to. It feels like they're just patching it together week by week.
Was it the best performance by Manchester United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer since he was appointed permanent?
Probably, yes. And also, I think it was the best performance of Harry Maguire in that centre, that three-man centre defence. When you put him in that centre of that three is when he does really well. But like what Keith said, Daniel James takes a lot of knocks. He took it a lot in the championship last season.
He's got to get his head checked.
Rashford worked hard. Pereira was good as well. But again, is Ole going to be able to
It's an encouraging result. It's an encouraging performance. But I don't want to get carried away, because I know that we can play this way. But against teams, we've got Norwich next. I'd love to see what we. I mean, before that, there's obviously the Europa League fixture.
But
Norwich,
Norwich
is coming next, and it'll be interesting to see how we unlock defenses like
this.
This
is a cobbled together, patched up squad.
Yep.
There's no defining characteristic about it. There's no plan about it.
There's no leaders in that squad.
There's no leaders. I mean, it's just like there's no sense that this is how they play. They play like this. They do this.
Okay.
I don't see a future for this.
All right. Similarly, was it Liverpool's worst performance this season?
With the Liverpool, it's quite interesting because they haven't been playing that well the last few games.
Exactly.
Yeah. A few fans have said
that. Even this entire season, if you think of it, I don't think they've hit the heights that they've hit last season.
Not yet. I mean, the Leicester one, you know how lucky, fortunate they were against Sheffield United when that ball went in by Wijnaldum. So in that sense, they haven't been that swashbuckling, dominating teams like what they did at last season. Mm. Of course, they missed Salah last night. Salah not being around definitely didn't help. Origi is not a starter. He's an impact sub that comes in. But otherwise, they'll be happy with that point.
And I think for Liverpool, there was a lot of talk. Like, I think Van Dijk in particular came out before the game and said something along the lines of,
the Man United game is not the biggest game.
He has every right to say that, because logically, given but the that's, context that's of where United and Liverpool are now, obviously they've got bigger fish to fry. Yeah. But bottom line is, this was a derby match. There was a lot of rivalry, a lot at stake, pride in this. Yeah. And I think towards the middle of the first half, at least, the pressure got to them. Because Old Trafford was cracking, and there was a lot of misplaced passes. It was uncharacteristic of Liverpool, especially Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson, who have been so consistent on the flanks with the deliveries. Yeah. They struggled a little bit, but eventually they recovered, especially when they got the goal in the final 10 minutes.
Said Klopp came for the meat and he just got the fish at the end
of the day. Jose Mourinho.
The high intensity that Liverpool play, eventually, these are all internationals as well, eventually it's going to get to them.
Okay, well, Liverpool's slip-up means Man City make up 2 points on the leaders, because it was Crystal Palace 0, Man City 2. Here's Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, definitely. It's an international break, play here in Selhurst Park, and team what at home create a lot of chances with the quality they have up front. But we attack well, we concede few at the end with Benteke, two chances, but incredible save from Mehdi. Unfortunately, we cannot convert the third and the fourth, we create a lot of chances. Unfortunately, we didn't score, but it's okay. 3 points and move forward.
Big 3 points in the end for Guardiola and Man City. They started the match with no central defenders. They had Rodrigo Fernandinho in central defence.
It worked, because Rodri, I think, brought a lot of composure. He was very calm on the ball. Fernandinho tried to be a centre-back partnering with Otamendi. It didn't work. Otamendi was pulled up last minute in that match. But this game, for me, with the two goals by City, it was one very unlike City goal with the header goal. But the second goal, I mean, I've tried to look as many goals this weekend around Europe. There is no better team goal out there this week.
I was spine tingling when I saw that.
It was exhibition football. It was exhibition football.
And it goes back to the decision that Guardiola made by playing Rodri and Fernandinho, both of whom are not centre-backs, but both of whom are supremely comfortable on the ball. And that second goal is a clear example of what Guardiola demands from this team, not just from the goalkeeper, but even from their centre-backs. Yeah. We don't want centre-backs who are centre-backs for the sake of it. We need someone, even if they're not centre-backs, but they need to be extremely confident on the ball, even when dealing with players or teams like Crystal Palace, who can hit you on the break with pace. But they need someone who can be really, really comfortable on the ball. And I thought they got that with Rodri and Fernandinho.
This was a back four that is completely new from last season. Yeah, Cancelo at the right back. Mendy has had his injuries, but he's back. And then we talked about the two central defenders. Yeah. So it's completely different back four. But the good thing about Pep is, even after this game, he's come out and said, we need to be more ruthless.
Yeah.
We're not ready for the Champions League yet. That's the man striving for perfection, which he's always doing.
I started reading a long Twitter thread by some irate Arsenal fan, which started off, I'm going to explain why Pep Guardiola is the biggest fraud.
These Twitter threads are the real frauds.
The way the man has managed to, as you said, Arvin, has managed to maintain their hunger and their drive through success, which is actually a very difficult thing to do.
I mean, the entire world is trying to play out from the back.
Yeah.
In Malaysia, we've got a new football DNA, right, that's been implemented by FAM that requires defences to play out from the back.
Oh, okay.
That was started off by Pep Guardiola's revolution at Barcelona in 2008. And how do you call this guy a fraud?
Yeah. Agreed.
Doesn't Malaysia have the goalkeepers?
We're trying to find.
Do we have anything nice to say about Palace? Going into the game, they actually had a very good home record.
This was supposed to be a potential bananas game. Yeah. It was talked up as
It was. Zaha flitted in and out.
His best performance, but he's only got one assist this season. Yeah. I mean, you know he doesn't have that output. Yeah. Something's wrong. Palace, for me, the first half of the season, you can summarize that it's like an elephant that's gotten up on a tree. You don't know how it's ended up there, but it's there. But somehow, in that sense, good home form. Roy Hodgson knows how to play well defensively. But against City and the quality that was going to be there, No chance.
I have never heard that saying before. But I'm going to use it.
And, you know, for all the praises that you can give Roy Hodgson, right? But we know who Roy is. We've seen him manage high-profile clubs before. And I genuinely think, no matter how much quality Crystal Palace invests in the squad, they're never going to properly challenge the traditional top six, as long as Roy is there.
But that's not his target, though.
Crystal Palace are not hoping to.
I mean, look at the team. There's a lot of quality in there.
Yeah, but top
they've
six.
Got, they've got the capacity to break into the top 10, challenge for the top 9 at least. You know, and yes. I don't think they're going to grow as the club. So as long Brighton made the call with Graham Potter and Chris Hughton, a lot of clubs are making the call to go for more dynamic, innovative, modern young
managers.
You've
got to remember when they brought...
And Palace have got to do that.
When they brought him in.
They needed the stability.
But they needed the stability.
Correct. Yeah, but now they've got that stability. They've got to evolve.
Well, they can't just kick the guy out. Come on.
All right, moving on then. Bye, Roy.
Yes, you're so successful, you've got to go.
Leicester 2, Burnley 1. Leicester up to 3rd. Here's Brendan Rodgers.
Well, we take it. I think it's, like I said, I'm not going to argue against guys that sat and analysed and said it's wrong. I think it's one. My feeling, I'm relaxed on it all. I think, like I said, away at Liverpool a couple of weeks ago, we had a penalty given against us that wasn't clearly a penalty and ended up costing us the points. So I wasn't crying about it afterwards. It's something that, unfortunately, you have to accept as part of the game. You're disappointed if you're on the wrong end of it. But like I say, I was more pleased with how we won the game today. Tough game, the emotion of the whole occasion. The supporters picked us up. We weren't so good in the first half. We get ourselves back into it with the header with Jamie. And then second half, we were much more aggressive and much better. And like I say, we won't always be perfect in how we play, but we showed a great quality and a great mentality today to get a very important 3 points.
It was an emotional... I was going to say Filbert Street. What's the name of the stadium again?
King Power Stadium,
yeah. 27th of October is the anniversary of Vichai's death. So it was all emotional stuff. But this Leicester side, they're very solid under Brendan Rodgers. They're churning out results now. Okay, they had the help of VAR in this one. Chris Wood's goal disallowed. Controversially.
Yeah. It looked like Johnny Evans clipped Johnny Evans on that one. Vichai will be very proud of how this club has moved on since his untimely death. I mean, on the pitch, they're doing well. They've got one of the best young managers in Brendan Rodgers. They play enterprising good football. Off the pitch as well, they're moving to a huge new training facility. They're looking to expand the stadium. So it was a very, very, like what Brendan said, an emotional occasion. The message was always in our hearts, which I'm sure all the fans feel about him. But good on them to get the win, but a little bit unfortunate. And now I understand why Sean Dyche is always coming out and scathing against VAR, because he's one manager that gets very little of help from VAR.
I really like Leicester. I think they're doing a great job. And it's a team that you can understand what they do, unlike, say, United. And Brendan Rodgers is a man who's giving himself a lot of good marks here. I think a lot of clubs will be looking at him. But you can't really... Can you step up from Leicester? They're third now.
They
could conceivably maintain that. And if they did maintain that, they'd probably have a bigger point total than when they won.
They've also got history. They've won the league before.
I genuinely think they could easily be in the top four this year. I mean, judging by where Spurs are, Arsenal's inconsistency here and there.
Yeah.
You look at Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea has shown plenty of potential. Yeah, great. But Leicester are definitely in the mix. Top two would be difficult, but top four is not impossible with the quality that they have, the consistency that they're showing. And they're fearless. And most importantly, like they showed this weekend, even when things aren't going too well, not just for the club, but for individuals like James Maddison, they can still grind out results.
As long as Mrs. Vardy...
Well...
yeah.
...stays out of headlines.
Great banter from Jamie Vardy and the fans. He cupped his ears like, what are you saying? After he scored the goal. All right, first break. We'll be back with more of the weekend's football right after this.
Where's the try? And he's always prepared to give it a go.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Captain, leader, legend.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Thanks for sticking with us. Keish, Arvin and Cam in the studio talking about Chelsea 1, Newcastle United 0. Here's Chelsea boss Frank Lampard.
The first half was tough. It was frustrating because Newcastle had a lot of people behind the ball, very well organised. You can see why they've got results this year like that. And a threat on the counter-attack. But the message at half-time was that we needed to be a bit braver, take a bit more risk, show our one-on-ones and the ability we got to take people out of the game. And the second half, we did that. The only thing I'll complain about is it wasn't two or three to make that last 10 minutes more comfortable, but we weren't even really giving chances away in the second half too much. So pleased with the combinations in the second half, and it's a big 3 points.
Big 3 points indeed. Marcus Alonso's second half strike, breaking Newcastle resistance, shooting Chelsea into the top four. It's all going well for Super Frankie Lampard.
Yeah, they should have had their transfer ban years ago.
No, he's doing a stellar job. And right now, it's come to a point that they don't even remember Eden Hazard being part of that squad, I feel, because they've got such good young talent. I think Hudson-Odoi was great on the day, really, the way that he played. Even Jorginho was bossing the midfield. Like, we've not even seen Jorginho do under Sarri when Sarri's actually main guy.
Yeah, I think he's been given a new lease of life under Lampard, a bit of a freedom in terms of...
Even Kurt Zouma, who's indifferent, I thought had one of his best games that day. So in that sense, Lampard is doing an increasingly good job as week. They started a bit sluggish the first half, I thought. But second half, they came in and fully deserved the 3 points.
Willian, I love Willian. And I think he doesn't get enough praise.
Because the output isn't there. He gets a lot of praise for a lot of the other work that he does. But you're talking about assists and goals in where he plays. The output isn't great.
Was he not involved in the goal? Wasn't he the guy who gave the assist to the assist to Aaron? He does these diagonal runs across the pitch.
Yeah, he
that
does.
Completely screw up.
No, he's a great talent. One that's definitely keeping players like Pulisic. With minimal opportunities in the first team. You look at the Newcastle side. I think even before this game started, everyone kind of knew it was going to be hyper low scoring because Newcastle just defend so low, defend in numbers. Fabian Schär was amazing again. I think he's been one of Newcastle's best players throughout the season. But the guy that really caught the attention yet again, Saint-Maximin. His start to the season was riddled with a bit of injury. But in the last few games, even against Man United, every time he burst forward, he looked like he was going to cause a lot of trouble.
He always looks like the most likely guy. Yes. I mean, okay, 1-0 to Chelsea. If you're a Newcastle fan, no need to panic.
Yeah, they switched to a back five from that game. So like what you said, they defend in numbers. But we should not forget that they've beaten Man United. They've beaten Spurs this season as well. It's so funny.
Yes, but you have to beat the teams around you.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But Saint-Maximin, what you spoke about, I read a quite interesting article. Newcastle fans feel he's a Ronaldinho reincarnation. That's how he plays on the pitch. So he's that one player that when you get the ball, you feel something special.
Yeah, but he does give you that feeling. Even in that match against Man United, I was like, yo, this guy, he's just so talented on the ball. The problem for them is there's very little avenue for goals.
Joelinton
hasn't exactly...
Yeah.
I mean, I think he will eventually come good. He's got a lot of talent. But you look elsewhere on the pitch, it's difficult to see where goals are going to come from.
Elneny should have contributed.
He hasn't yet. That's the problem.
It's a dire need of goals because...
He's such a talented player.
It's a dire need of goals because he's a Steve Bruce team as well. Yeah. That's why it's going to be a dire need of goals team.
And you have... Finally, you actually have Newcastle fans staying away from... I know this is a away game, but they're actually beginning to stay away from St. James's Park.
They had the owner, Mike Ashley, reportedly, based on a report that was published today by The Athletic, Mike Ashley had a meeting with a couple of potential buyers from Mexico, owners of Santos Laguna, I think. And according to the report, the meeting went pretty bad. because Mike Ashley was reportedly very rude in negotiations.
Oh, God.
Nothing surprising there.
He's like the Trump of...
Yeah. we'll move on. Everton 2, West Ham United 0. Probably the most under pressure manager going into the weekend was Everton's Marco Silva. He made five massive changes. He completely overhauled the central midfield area. My word, how they played for
there
him.
Was a feeling amongst Everton players, even when they were struggling before this early in the season, that they were not against the manager, that they believed in him, that they bought into the principles. And I think this game showed why. Because they performed really, really well all over the park. Bernard was great. Richarlison was restored into the number nine role. Calvert-Lewin was dropped. Sigurdsson was dropped as well. Andre Gomez ran the midfield. So this was a terrific all-around performance. But again, I'm just thinking to myself,
think about an Everton side with this performance week in, week out, with a more consistent goal scorer up front. That I just think generally they get a goal scorer, they will look a complete different team.
With Everton, it was the best performance of the league this season from them, I feel.
Easily.
But one interesting fact, and you brought up about that, Andre Gomes, every time he's not been in that squad, they have lost.
Yep.
So that shows how important he is in the middle.
It was the pairing of Gomes and Tom Heaton. Is it Tom Heaton?
Tom Davis.
Even. I knew it sounded wrong. Suddenly they had so much pace in that middle.
Yeah.
They do.
Previously and really slow.
And Jibril Sidibe, I thought, was very good.
He was great.
But I read another funny quote. Everton's a bit like Brexit, promise so much, but then underdeliver when the time comes. But yeah, I mean, if you just feel if they could do this week in and week out, they would be where they are supposed to be, which is challenging top six.
They definitely need a more consistent goals. I think Richarlison is great. He will score you the odd goals every now and then.
Yeah.
But he makes a lot of runs, the diagonal runs, drags defenders along. If they just had someone in the box, a fox in a box who can convert those chances, there'll be so much.
They would roll back the years on that.
They were trying so hard to get Zaha, and he would have been great.
Again, I don't know if Zaha is that guy that's gonna. I think he would definitely add quality, like what Alex Iwobi has done. He was great in that number 10 role.
He was great in the number 10 role.
But they need one of those guys. I mean, even if they had a prime Lukaku now, even if they had a Sebastian Haller or Wesley.
Tony Cotty.
And the guy from Villa.
Duncan Ferguson.
Freddie Jeffers, box in the box.
they just get a better goal scorer, a more consistent goal scorer, and I think this Everton team.
But we've been saying this since Lukaku.
Yeah, we have, exactly.
I'll just add a note of caution here. These Everton, West Ham, the two flakiest teams in the league. One of these, statistically speaking, one of these teams was going to end up looking fantastic.
The other one was going to end up looking terrible. The problem is it's 1 week on, one week off. That's the problem. West Ham, exactly what the guy said. They can blow so hot. They can beat Man United.
So good.
But Pellegrini wanted to sub all the 11 players
because it's one win in six. We remember the time they beat United, but it's one win in six. Yeah. Their backup goalkeeper, Roberto, kept that score down. They could have lost much higher than that.
Yeah. True. All right, another break. We'll wrap up the EPL for you when we get back.
Because whilst he's there, it's been very difficult for other clubs to get near them. He's that good.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
England's highest quality title race of all time, but coming out on top again in the Premier League. Manchester City.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. Keishanan, Arvind and Cam in the studio. Tweet us at BFM Radio on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. It's BFM Football. Just to wrap up the weekend's football then, Aston Villa 2, Brighton 1. Again, this game was VAR-induced, VAR-influenced. But Matt Target scoring a dramatic late winner. That's back-to-back wins now for Villa. They're slowly picking up results.
They do. And Jack Grealish is coming into
Jack Grealish was great in this game.
And you would think that he could potentially have an England call-up based on how he's been playing.
It got to eventually.
But that game turned on when Aaron Moy recklessly got sent off.
Yeah. Two very silly yellow cards.
Especially the second one. You knew he was going to get sent off the moment he was running at the player. So
he's a very systematic manager, Graham Potter, and his system of playing a back three really hinges a lot, especially on Aaron Moy's role in midfield. And the moment he got sent off, you knew this was going to get bad for Brighton, and eventually did. It was a frustrating result. I mean, for Villa it's great, Jack Grealish turned up yet again, Matt Target dramatic equaliser, but for Brighton the only concern is
they don't travel well
is one thing, but the longer this result goes on, the longer they struggle. I'm just afraid that it will force Graham Potter to try and play differently.
Yeah, route one football.
Abandon his principles, because his principles is what got him the job in the first place. What he did with Swansea, what he did with Östersunds in Sweden. I'm just hoping things work out for Brighton, because there's these new forms of statistics in modern football. They're called expected goals, XG, based on the amount of tangible, clear-cut chances you create. And if you were to just look at expected goals this season, Brighton should be sixth on the table. That's the amount of combination of bad luck and on their part, poor finishing that has
that makes them where they are at the moment.
If you can't score proper G's, you get XG's. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Spurs. There's a lot going wrong at Tottenham Hotspur at the moment. They were lucky to salvage a point against Watford. Dele Alli VAR-approved equaliser on the borderline of arm and shoulder.
Very, very lucky. I think Watford were ruining only getting a point against the most out-of-form team right now.
There was that penalty as well that they should have gotten. That was a penalty for me.
Harry Kane pushed Christian Kasebe on the way to when Dele Alli scored. So Spurs have considered them very lucky, but there's big, big problems in that squad. You look at players that just don't show any interest at all in what's going on. And it's very surprising for a club like Spurs and Daniel Levy that he's allowed this to happen.
I mean, everyone sits and slams Man United week in, week out. But you compare this Man United squad and that Spurs squad. You look at the amount of quality that Spurs have. I mean, they are way worse the Man United at the moment with the level of quality that they have.
Not quality, it's a lack of effort. That it's an effort that's not there.
No, but hang on. I think that it's a little unfair because Spurs are victims of their own success. They've perhaps overachieved.
Victims of a lack of success.
No. They got really close, and for Spurs, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, but you're looking at a team that's been hammered by Bayern, that have been taken to school by Brighton, and who've got very lucky against Watford. Because
and they've had about three years now of high intensity training, where they are now just worn out, and they're bored of their training. They're probably sick to death of the sight of each other because there's no turnover.
Whose fault is that?
It's the club's fault how can you allow someone like Eriksen into the part of his contract where he can show that he's going to have no interest anymore? Alderweireld looked like he didn't care on that day. The only guy that actually comes on and tries his best for Spurs is Son Heung-min.
Yeah.
The rest of that squad doesn't look like they're bothered anymore.
Yes, but they projected themselves now into a sort of a financial bracket where they're at the expectation they should pay the amount of wages that a Manchester United pays. Manchester United has been in that revenue stream forever, but Spurs, they are built to be the sixth team.
And you got a question, Pochettino. You're playing at home against a team that's potentially going to be relegated. Why have you started with three centre-backs on the night? Why? You're at home against Watford.
Maybe those are the only fit players he has.
I think it's more of a play starting with three centre-backs. Instead of playing five at the back, they were looking to play with three at the back. But because they were overrun in midfield, it forced the fullbacks to drop a lot deeper and it ended up looking like five at the back.
And the fullbacks
and that
are not
caused
great.
Them a lot
and
of problems.
The fullbacks are not great because Danny Rose is not interested.
We've spoken about this. There's so many problems with these Spurs squads.
Yeah.
Recruitment has always been one of them. They let Kieran Trippier go. They did not replace him.
Sergio thinks he's the best right back, but he's not.
That left back position is a fundamental problem as well. Danny Rose was poor for England.
Very poor.
Was poor for England as well. Yeah. Up front, Harry Kane, in and out. Son Heung-min, I agree with Irwin, he's the only one that works his socks off. Christian Eriksen, I mean, we saw how he played for Denmark during the international breaks.
Yeah.
You know, he was ridiculously good. A fully motivated Christian Eriksen. He looks subpar again.
Like what we say, it's Poch's biggest challenge.
Well, that's what I'm alluding to now. It is Poch's squad, Pochettino's team. He got them to this position. He got them to punch above their weights for seasons now. Is he the man to either rebuild Spurs, if it needs rebuilding, or gee these guys back up again?
There's two situations with this, right? First is you sack him now, get in a new manager, a fresh challenge for everyone in the team. Or second, you wait it out. That means Spurs will go through a really difficult season. They might finish outside the top six even, right? And then you allow Spurs, you allow Poch to rebuild his team.
With money.
With money.
With what he's done, the latter suggestion, he deserves it. Because he's done so well for them.
I'd go with that.
But do you get the feeling that's something Pochettino wants as well? You get the impression even Poch is
starting to have doubts.
Exactly. It's starting to grate on him now.
It's not like he has had a very smooth relationship with Daniel Levy either.
Yeah.
There's been multiple times where he's come out in press conference and sarcastically hinted that they don't have the budget.
This weekend he said we're not going to spend in January, and he happily said that to cameras.
But this is something pointed at Daniel Levy. In the past, he's got amazing money for Modric, for Bale.
Yeah,
why
has
he let these players go into their final years of contracts with potentially nothing to come out of it?
It's the wages. That's where the money is, is spent these
Spurs
days.
Spurs have a wage structure that even now, despite trying to break into the new bracket of clubs, they've still not abolished those wage structure absolutely. Yet. It's still there.
So Eriksen's being paid, I don't know, he'd probably be like the top player in Wolves or something.
And for about 2 years, his agent's going, do you know how much if you were playing
Sign
for?
Yeah, even
if you were at Antwerp, you get more money
Well, Roy Keane is of the opinion that what Manchester United needs is
a Harry Kane.
Is a Harry Kane and presumably also a Pochettino.
The scary thing about Spurs is when somebody comes out and says what they need is your best player, it's possible with Spurs. You can see that happening, right? Which can't sit very well with Spurs fans.
It really can't.
I think Spurs got lucky, quite frankly, the last couple of years. They got lucky. They got close. The players now, they've had Champions League. They've also got internationals and Nations League.
And a lot of these players are hitting 25, 26, 27, 28, and they're all going to be starting to think of their last contract or their last two contracts, and this is where you make your money.
And they didn't even get a bonus, I don't think, when they got to second in the Champions League.
But to give him the benefit of the doubt, he has brought in players this season, but they've just been very unlucky with injuries.
Sessegnon has been injured.
So, I mean, in that sense, he hasn't been able to refresh the team because the personnel, he's not been able to call them on.
And I don't think Tottenham Hotspurs is rich enough to be able to really take that step.
I think they are.
They're close.
With the new stadium, they still recorded a revenue.
Yeah.
And I think they've got the financial capacity with the new stadium.
Levy's just super tight.
Because there was a report on the fact that them moving to Wembley actually made them a lot more money.
Mm-hmm.
Because the capacity of Wembley allowed them to sell way more tickets than they would ever do at White Hart Lane in the old one. And over the years of just playing in Wembley, that year and a half or two seasons they did that, they made significant amount of profit in just doing that.
So then Daniel Levy's going to have to...
They need to break into the
habit of a lifetime.
And I guess the unhappiest people at the Tottenham Stadium this weekend were Watford, who should have left with 3 points. Right, that's your weekend's football. Here then are your weekend's winners and losers.
This week's winners and losers.
Monday's big winner is Marco Silva, the Everton boss. Under immense pressure, he went into the weekend with a must-win match against the Hammers and his side delivered. So for making 5 changes to the starting 11 and for bringing joy back to Goodison Park whilst hauling Everton back out of the bottom 3, we say Marco Silva, you are Monday's main man. Honourable mentions go to Everton's Bernard for that solo opener against West Ham. To Aston Villa's Jack Grealish, a man of the match performance against Brighton after Aaron Moy's red card. To Frank Lampard's Chelsea for their 5th win on the bounce. To Brendan Rodgers' Leicester City, it was a win that pushes them up to 3rd. To Abdoulaye Doucouré, a giant in Watford's midfield against Spurs and a beautiful goal to boot. To Man City's Raheem Sterling for that sumptuous assist for David Silva's goal. And finally to Marcus Rashford. It's been a good week for young Marcus. He scored for club and country. Monday's big loser is Maurizio Pochettino and Spurs. They were on the verge of their 5th defeat in 6 games before Dele Alli's VAR-approved equaliser. Something is inherently wrong at Tottenham, and whilst Maurizio is trying to fix it, Spurs are losing ground on the top 4. So for yet another lacklustre performance, we say sorry Maurizio Pochettino and Spurs, you are Monday's big losers. Dishonourable mentions go to the West Ham starting 11 against Everton. Manuel Pellegrini said he wanted to change all 11 at half-time as the Hammers were outfought and outclassed at Goodison Park. To Eddie Howe and Bournemouth for missing out on the chance to make the top 4 by drawing with Norwich. To Brighton and Hove Albion, admirable in defeat, but yet another late lapse in concentration has cost them precious points. And finally, to VAR. It seems to have caused more controversy than it has solved, and yet again this weekend matches and outcomes were affected. Whilst it is a season of implementation, fans would like to see some consistency in the rules. They'd also like to see the referees use the pitch site monitor to review the incident for themselves.
Go there, girl. That's producer Tasha there with the weekend's winners and losers. Back with the midweek fixtures right after this.
Where's the try? And he's always prepared to give it a go.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Captain, leader, legend.
Off the ball on BFM 89.9.
Thanks for sticking with us. Taking a look at the midweek action tonight, tomorrow morning, 15th place Sheffield United take on 5th place Arsenal. If Sheffield wins, if they win this, they'll move into the top 10. If Arsenal win this, they'll move into the top 3. Big game.
Big game. And this is the type of games that Sheffield United worked so hard to get out of the championship.
Bramall Lane on a Monday night.
The stadium is one of the oldest, but one of the most daunting places to go to. Yeah. The fans will be on them. And they've got one of their own, Chris Wilder, who has actually got a tattoo of the crest of the club on him. So it just shows that he's one of their own. But yeah, they would love nothing more than to really stick it to Arsenal and be physical with them, to be honest.
Unai Emery's not going to know what's going to hit him tonight, tomorrow. It's a 3 a.m.
Clutching his little espresso, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, but they were desperately unlucky against Liverpool. I thought they could have got something out of that game as well. So they've shown that they can actually go up against one of these top 6 sides. And credit to them. They've done really well since they've gone up.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, all eyes on the Arsenal then. Arsenal also in Europa League action. Talk about that later. Champions League. Spurs need to get their Champions League campaign up and running. They take on Crvena Zvezda.
Red Star Belgrade.
Red Star Belgrade. Yeah, of course, tonked 7-1. First time an English club's been, had 7 put past them at home. Ever.
I think for Spurs, probably the best thing would be to just get out of the Champions League as quickly as possible.
From this group?
No, for this Spurs, they are so just deep.
But financially, it doesn't make sense, though. The longer they stay, the more TV revenue they get.
Exactly. And this is a must-win game, but you would think that at home, they should be able to take Red Star. But the current Spurs situation,
yeah, these players, they're demotivated, they're worn out, they need a break.
Well, Red Star are 2 points better off than Spurs. They responded with an opening defeat with a comeback victory on match day 2. It is a doubleheader of sorts. So it's away for Spurs now. Sorry, it's home for Spurs now, and then it's away in 2 weeks' time.
Interestingly,
so very big meet up.
I'm just thinking, what kind of motivation is it for the players? It's like, come on, lads.
To be on that shop window, to be at that European stage, to play against other European clubs.
Christian Eriksen could put in the performance that makes Madrid.
It's not like someone in Real Madrid is going, oh my God, have you heard of this Christian Eriksen guy?
Yeah, yeah. I think players at this level don't need to play to put themselves in the window anymore.
And also, it's not going to...
Clubs will recognise them.
Yeah, play for Tottenham Hotspurs, extra revenue.
But it's a duty for you. You're being paid by the club you
expect. I get that, but I'm struggling to think of how that is a source of motivation for them.
Exactly.
I think logically, that is the argument. Yeah. Logically, you're getting paid, you be a professional, work your socks off. But at the end of the day, these guys are humans. They're affected by a lot of things off the pitch.
Yes,
and at the moment, I'm struggling to think of a reason how they get motivated. But
and they were in the final last year.
And the crazy thing is, they're up against the side that is, you know, historically will be up for this.
Yeah.
Red Star Belgrade and their incredible fan base.
Yeah. And
they will be turning the new White Hart Lane up in midweek.
Mm. And they've been interested in quite a few ex-Premier League players as well. Marco Marin and Rajiv De La Rampara.
Yeah.
So they've got players there who know how to play against English squads. And they've got a history.
Yeah.
Red Star has got a history behind them. So,
sure.
But Spurs at home, I mean, this is the start of their new era with the new stadium, and it's just crumbling apart for them right now.
Okay, well, Man City should be putting a hatful past Atalanta in Group C. That's a Tuesday night, Wednesday morning game. City played 2-1-2 in Group C. Pep said this week, still not good enough to win the Champions
Striving
League.
Striving for perfection, as always.
Striving for perfection. I wonder how long Pep's given himself to win the Champions League. Liverpool are away at Genk in Belgium. It's the first time these two teams are meeting. The Reds versus Belgian sides, generally quite good. 10 wins, 2 draws, 1 loss. Genk are no pushovers. Well, they are in this group. They too with just the 1 draw. But Liverpool first match day, 1 loss, and then came back to win. And they've got pedigree.
Are they going to have full squad for this, do you think?
Salah, he's come out and said that Salah potentially could be there to play in this game. But Genk, even though, like you said, pushovers in Europe, but they are a club with quite a lot of history of producing good, very, very good players. KDB, Koulibaly, and even Divock Origi is going to go up against his own squad if he starts. But Liverpool, you would think, would have too much class.
So they're not going to rest anybody, you don't think?
I mean, There will be a couple of changes. Mm. You might see players like Adam Lallana getting a chance after scoring.
Shaqiri might get run out.
I think the front three is the one where it all comes down to fitness, because you'd want to rest as much as them. But I think this will be comfortable for Liverpool, there's no doubt.
Yeah. For me, the game of the Champions League midweek comes from Group H. Yeah. Ajax against Chelsea.
For sure, yeah.
Ajax have been shorn of all last season's stars.
Yo, but it's crazy. And this is exactly why Man United should break their bank and get Edwin van der Sar over as the director of football.
I don't think so. They shouldn't get Edwin van der Sar. They should get Erik ten Hag. Yeah. I mean, the manager who's come out today and said that if Bayern come for me, I cannot say no.
No, I don't think it's just the manager. It's the recruitment. The way they've been able to not just... I mean, you look
at this
team.
It's the whole
team.
Van der Sar over Mars.
But we've had this with Ajax for years.
It's not been up to this quality.
Absolutely.
What I don't get is Ajax... We know they traditionally produce talents within their own academy. But what I've been rather more impressed in the last few years is that combination of Overmars, Van der Sar up top, is that they've not just depended solely on their player production factory, but they've also been able to go out and really, really smartly recruit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Quincy Promes has been such a revelation for them in attack for Ajax this season. Even in midfield, they've lost players like Frankie De Jong.
Yeah, but then you buy Dusan Tadic. Yeah, it's a clever buy, right?
It's so good. They've lost players at the back and they've been able to replace them. De Ligt has gone and they've replaced them seamlessly at the back. So it's the way the club is being run, not just from the point of view of developing talents, but also really smartly managing recruitment. It's such a revelation.
Well, if Ajax beat Chelsea, they will be three wins out of three. 9 points, and you'd say 1 foot into the next round.
But Chelsea, I would not rule out.
This is it. Wow. This is it. This is where Frank Lampard's work really starts, because it's a good squad. We know he has that. Is it good enough to do both tournaments?
Yeah, and at Amsterdam Arena, you would think that they would have that edge, because Ajax last season, if we talked about how Spurs have crumbled, they were in the Champions League semis last season, and they've just continued on that trajectory up. Yeah.
All right, in the Europa League, Man United are away against Partizan. It's a Friday, 12:55 a.m. kickoff. In fact, United have all away games. Norwich at the weekend, and then Chelsea the midweek after that, all away from home.
This one will... I mean, the Liverpool game is big, but purely from the point of view of mentality, I think this one will be a major test of mentality. Because Belgrade is not an easy place to go to and play.
And if you were Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you'd now already start putting importance in Europa League.
And you look at how a vast majority of England thinks that Man United should take Europa League a little lightly, rest their players, rotate, give their youngsters a chance.
Should be the opposite.
Jose Mourinho made a really good point on Sky Sports saying that United should prioritise Europa League over the Premier League, because the Europa League is their only chance of playing in the Champions League next year.
He speaks from experience because he's won it before. But Partizan are actually managed by Savo Milosevic, ex-Villa, legendary Villa striker. So the one thing about them coming for this game is he's come on and he's been very practical. Partizan's got quite a bad record of racism recently, and he's just said, we're welcoming a big team. Can our fans show the required respect? But on the field, they will go at United.
Yeah. There's going to be pyros, flares, tifos. If you put Mason Greenwood in there, this is a bigger test of his character.
Yeah, yeah. Good point.
It's quite a small
point.
Stadium. Isn't it stadium this?
Yeah, it's very compact.
All right. Elsewhere, you've got Slovan Bratislava against Wolves in Group K. Arsenal are in Group F. They entertain Vitória Guimarães of Portugal. That's it. We're out of time. So, many thanks, Cam Roslan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Arvin.
Take care, everyone. Have a good week.
And thank you, Keith.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah, have a great week, everyone. Back on Friday. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Off the Ball, every Monday on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.